Welcome to another brand new episode of Take a Shelfie, the podcast about bottle shops and the pints and people you find therein. I'm Jeff Martin, and with me as always is a man who once stood in the middle of a police station and yelled, "Detective!" Matt Prince. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing just fine, Jeff. It's, I'm a little stir crazy today because it's been pouring all day. I was outside once and that kind of sucked, but now I'm here with you, so that makes it better.
But you're not on the verge of becoming one of those serial killers who kills people based on the seven deadly sins, are you?
No, I'm not.
That was the whole detective
thing. Yeah, I got you. I saw where you were going with that.
Yeah, and so let's take a step further, and I'll ask you what you're drinking.
Well, nothing yet. I have a can in front of me that I'm about to crack. I'll crack it right now. It's a Zonger from Second Sin Brewing Company.
Oh, how convenient, Matt, because I'm drinking a beer called Slave the Hive from Second Sin Brewing Company.
Well, that's funny, Jeff, that we both decided to have a beer from Second Sin. I wonder why that could be.
Well, it's because we're having the owner of Second Sin on as our guest today.
We are. We're having Mike Boreski on today to talk a little bit about this wonderful brewery that's starting to get some local hype around here called Second Sin, as we've said. And I'm really excited to talk to them. I met Mike once. They were pouring beers at the Old Kensington Beer Garden in Fishtown, Philadelphia. Well, Old Kensington. I'd been wanting to try their beers for a while. I heard some great reviews. I kind of heard their name being tossed around on the breweries in PA Facebook page. And I had a double dry hopped double IPA and it was fantastic. I mean, it was really, really good.
Matt, we're also going to be joined by Jake Howell, who is the lead brewer over at Second Sin. So let's just let them in the room and welcome them. Mike and Jake, welcome to Take a Shelfie.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having us. How's it going?
We're doing good. We're drinking your beer, so we're doing great. We're drinking great. A little Slave the Hive and a little Zonger, so we're doing real good.
Excellent.
So when we have guests on, our first question, I'm sure you guys have gotten this question 1,000 times, but I'm going to ask you anyway. And this is for both of you. So what was the beer that got you into craft beer? Which one did it
sure.
for you?
I mean, there's a lot of beers that I had at a lot of different points that I could point to. But I mean, since you're drinking Slave the Hive, that kind of makes it easy. The one that got me into the idea of, wanting to brew and make beer myself was Bell's Hopslam. So that came out, that always comes out in like January, February every year. And I turned 21 in September and then started drinking good beer right away. But so that, 4 months later when Hopslam came out, I had that and that was like kind of a mind blower. Like at the time, something that hoppy and bitter and like crazy. Nowadays it's, pretty tame by a lot of standards. Like it doesn't have, 55 pounds of marshmallows per barrel or something. But at the time, like it just, the flavor of it blew me away. And I basically went back to that bar that had it on tap every single day and drank it until that keg kicked. And so I mentioned Slave the Hive. Slave the Hive is my homage to Hopslam. So it's a double IPA brewed with local honey, much like Hopslam is. And it's hopped with very similarly. I use regular Amarillo and Simcoe pellets, but also Amarillo and Simcoe Cryo. So those weren't around when Hopslam first came out. But basically, this is my take on a beer like that. So that was really the first one that kind of made me think, all right, maybe I need to try making my own beer and do something like that.
And Jake has a better memory for this stuff than I do, but Sierra Nevada Pale Ale was one of the first craft beers I had that it's like, oh man, this is so much better than the fraternity party Natty Lights that I'm currently drinking although I am partial to Miller High Life, which I'm still drinking now. It's still beer. But I went up to visit Jake at Penn State once, and we went to Zeno's, which is a beer bar there, and I had a sour beer for the first time, and that absolutely blew my mind that sour could taste good in a beer and like beer can taste like that. It was just, that was a wild experience. So that kind of is what got me into craft beer.
This podcast is very quickly turning into a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale fan club podcast and a Natty Light hater podcast, because that answer is everyone's answer. Everyone got into craft beer one way or another at somewhere along their journey, had Sierra Nevada, yeah, and then almost immediately stopped drinking Natty Light.
Yeah. I mean, so I drank Sierra Nevada. I replaced my Natty with Sierra Nevada, but drinking the High Life.
That's a big, big upgrade. Big upgrade.
Not
there.
The High Life. That's
no, it's the champagne beers.
Yeah. I mean, come on. It's a great beer. So, Jake, you touched on this a little bit about, you know, how you started. Like most brewers, including my co-host Jeff here, who is a home brewer, you started out as a home brewer. And can you tell us what made you want to jump into professional brewing and the long road to opening? And I think you guys started with a different name, yep, too.
Yep. He can tell that story. I'll tell the, you know, getting into pro brewing story. I think, you know, shortly after I had Hop Slam, I had brewed one batch of beer before. I had that Hop Slam and it turned out terrible. And I quit brewing for about a year. The Hop Slam is kind of what got me back into it. And so we started brewing every now and then, you know, in our college apartment. The beer still wasn't very good. I would say somewhere around maybe like batch five or so, I was back from Penn State visiting him down at Temple. And we were hammered. We were waiting for the subway going somewhere. And at the time, I was at a little bit of a crossroads with my education. Like, I had to decide if I wanted to go on to grad school, because that was something that I was thinking about going on to get my PhD, or if I wanted to do something else. And I just really was undecided. And, you know, we were hanging out and he said, you know, we should open a brewery, which, you know, sounded great at the time. But, you know, like I said, we'd only brewed about five beers, but whatever, we're still here. We're here right now. So yeah, it worked out. So that wound up, you know, changing the course of what I wound up doing in college. I just finished my degrees and then left and started working at a regular 9-to-5 job, all while, you know, having our eye towards doing something like this. And then when an opportunity came up to work as an apprentice at a brewery, I jumped at that, quit my job, and that was like 7 years ago. So, and then pretty much since, I think, 2011, when we had all graduated college, that's when we really started taking it seriously. That's when we started brewing all grain. And it was, hey, we want to open this brewery. It was just a matter of, like, honestly, I think maturing a little bit and, you know, getting to a point where, okay, let's actually sit down and put pencil to paper and make a plan for this thing. And yeah, here we are.
Yeah. And then, so like, we didn't have a name when we started homebrewing until like one night we were doing car bombs at the diner that's now no longer there. And one of Jake's cousins like looked at us and was like, "Oh, you're both big guys. You like food." And at the time we were thinking we're going to open a brew pub, because that's like the only way you could open a brewery and have a tap room at
back then.
So he's like, "You should call it Gluttony Brewing Company." And we were like, "Yes, that's the name. That's fun." So that's how, like, we homebrewed under that name for 6 years,
something like that.
So then when we got like serious about it and like we're forming the business plan and, you know, starting to do the business side of things, we went to trademark it. There is a winery out in California that has the trademark of Gluttony for use in alcohol.
And use in wine.
In wine, specifically. So we reached out to them or like, "Hey, we are never going to be big enough to distribute all the way up to California. We're just going to be a small brewery in this area. Can we use the name?" And the owner of the company said yes. But then he's like, "Well, let's have my lawyer, you know, like, just go over this and
write something up, sign it saying, you know, hey, we're letting you use the name, blah, blah, blah."
And when we got an email for the lawyer, they wanted royalties in perpetuity. and the royalties would increase as the size of our business increased. And we looked at each other and Phil, our other partner, and we were like, we have three shirts that say Gluttony on them. Other than that, that is it. Let's dump this name. So then we went through a bunch of other, you know, crappy names. And we're brewing one day and we're like, oh, it'd be cool if there was a definitive list of the sins. And there was, and Gluttony happened to be the second sin. So that's how we kind of landed on that and skirted that trademark debacle.
That is, that's a great story for one thing, but I love it. And for just, you know, for me, I just think second sin sounds,
it's a better name. It was a pain in the ass at the time, but overall, it's a better name. Right. Our logo is better. It was a blessing in disguise. Right.
And we don't offer food. So it would just be like, yeah, it's a couple fat guys that have beer. Yeah.
What brought you to Bristol and what brought you to Broken Goblet's former location?
Sure. So we wasted an entire year trying to work out a lease at a location in Doylestown. It was a beautiful spot. It never really like worked out with the landlords. Like they were asking for a ton. So we went back and forth again for like what, all of 2017?
It was basically, we found the building in like March of 2017. And it wasn't until like the end of December that we finally realized, you know, things were never gonna materialize between us. We kept going back and forth. They wanted us to basically sign the rest of our lives away and they wouldn't budge on it. And they weren't willing to do very much work to the building either. So finally, you know, December, we kind of called it quits on that. And that's when we were like, all right, well, we have to go back to the drawing board and figure out where are we going to open now.
And at that time, Broken Goblet was already like working on their new location. So Jake reached out to Mike and was like, so what's going on with your space and your equipment? Because at that time, they were going to leave in April of 2018.
June or something.
Yeah, like April. June. Yeah. So we're like, oh, we'll just hermit crab right in when you guys leave, if that's cool. And yeah, so we worked out something to do that. And then I don't know if you're familiar with, like, they ran into so many zoning things with the Ben Salem thing. So we ended up waiting on the
every delay that they experienced, that was the delay that we experienced. I mean, fortunately, we weren't paying rent at that time or anything. But we were supposed to, the whole thing was, we were supposed to sublet the spot from them for like their last year of their lease, essentially. And on then our lease was, you know, going to start in April of 2019. Well, at the time, you know, that kept getting pushed back. And we never wind up subletting. And we just, well, our lease starts April 1st, 2019. You guys got to get out. We got to get in.
But I mean, like during that year that we were kind of like waiting, we actually decided to put, you know, get our own brew house. So like we got something through Pioneer. So we ended up making a lot of changes to the building and to like the brewery that I guess wouldn't have happened had we just like started subletting.
They had a 3-barrel brew house. And right now we have a 5-barrel brew house. So we make a little bit more beer per batch. And, you know, a couple other things are different. So it wound up working out. It's just, again, another thing that at the time was frustrating, but maybe it was for the better.
But it, like Jake said, we weren't paying rent. Those guys were awesome. So they had us on tap at their closing.
Yeah, their last day here.
Cool. Like, it was our first time, like, selling the beer. But, yeah, it was pretty interesting experience.
This is a question for both of you, but I'll direct it first towards Jake. I was browsing through your beers on Untappd, and I saw this really cool can, and it's a beer called Home Field Advantage, and appropriately, in the Philadelphia tradition, field is spelled with a PH. And for the listeners, the can it has different colors. It has blue and red for the Phillies and the 76ers, and orange and black for the Flyers, and green and white for the Eagles. But the thing I love about that is it embraces sort of like the whole greater Philadelphia area, and Philadelphia is a huge beer culture. What does it mean to you guys to embrace being part of the Philadelphia beer scene?
I mean, nowadays, like with how many breweries there are, you go to any city and there's beer bars, right, where you can get a great selection. But frankly, like when we started drinking, you know, getting into craft beer, you know, 12 years ago when we turned 21, like the scene was like, it doesn't sound like a long time, but the scene was very, very different. And like Philadelphia was one of the only cities that had distribution from certain breweries, or just, you know, just great distribution in general. And, you know, places like Monk's at the time, Eulogy, these like institution bars that, you know, people across the country would talk about. And so, I mean, like being part of, you know, a great drinking city like that, that, you know, was very formative, because we would go down every single beer week and try everything we could. You know, even though there weren't a ton of breweries or anything, now there's a ton of breweries around. And, you know, before we got busy with this, we used to, I used to know every single brewery that was opening, and I would go to every single brewery that was opening. Nowadays, they'll be like, oh, there's like, you know, there's a brewery that opened like a mile from you. I'd be like, oh shit, yeah. I didn't know about that. It was too busy and there's too many.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's, Philadelphia has always been a phenomenal beer city, and it's been a phenomenal beer city. And then now we're happy to help make it a phenomenal brewery city as well.
So I was looking on Instagram and I saw that you just released a pair of beers. You released, I voted for Kang and I voted for Kodos, which are great names. You know, the Simpson reference is awesome. So tell us about the process of coming up for names for a beer.
So our names are like typically one of a few things. It's either a Seinfeld reference, a Simpsons reference, some stupid shit that only the three of us understand, or
generic pop culture reference.
Generic pop culture reference. So
that's
there is
a good beer name.
That's a great beer name. Boom. That's the process.
There's how you, like, generic pop culture reference will be a beer coming out from us in the next couple of months.
No, like that's literally our process.
Somebody will say something stupid and then it's like, boom, beer name.
Yeah.
And then I have a notepad file on my phone where we just type down, you know, all either ideas for beers or beer names and just keep track of them.
And, you know, for the most part, they have a good story behind them, because it's usually something funny that is the genesis of the name. But yeah, like we both have notes on our phones just loaded up with names. A lot of them happen like when we're on a long car ride or something like that.
Or on a canning run, because, you know, it's 3 hours where you're just doing something very monotonous and you get to talk. Like, we have a beer called A Perfect Cast. That was one where, you know, we were canning and we were talking about like the best Disney movie. And I said, well, obviously the best Disney movie is a Goofy movie. And then we just started talking about a Goofy movie and we're like, The Perfect Cast would be a great beer name. And so there you go, beer name, done. And then again, she crushed the artwork. The artwork for that one's great. You should look that up on Untappd. It's got a lot of references to the movie in it. You know, we have another beer coming out in a couple of weeks called Import, just a robust porter, but it's called Importer Exporter, after Art Vandelay from Seinfeld and one of his many jobs. So it's all dumb stuff like that.
Yeah.
I came by the brewery on Saturday and met you guys. And while I was waiting, I was looking at the list of beers you had available at the moment. And I was really intrigued because I saw there were obviously some double IPAs with the juicy hops and everything, but there were also like some really traditional styles. You had an Imperial Brown on and you had an English Bitter on. Do you find yourself like trying to strike a balance between what's popular and what you find rewarding to brew? And how do you find that balance?
I'll let Jake
I'll talk about that. And then you can talk about like, you know, how we keep the draft.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I personally just love to brew, not necessarily a particular style. And I've said it on a couple other interviews that like, it's a cool thing to like shit on hazy IPAs. Cause like, it feels like that's all you're brewing sometimes, but frankly, like being able to brew those so frequently affords me the opportunity to work on my process for those particular beers more than any other beer. I mean, if lagers become in vogue, then that'll be great too. I can iterate more on my process for lagers. Overall, like, you know, like you mentioned, we have an English mild on tap, which is not super common. We have an Imperial Brown Ale, but again, it has coffee and cacao nibs in it, so a little something to get people interested. We have a Blonde Ale. We've brewed a Cream Ale. We've talked about, you know, for next football season, brewing just a standard light American lager.
Yeah.
Just, you know, a drinking beer for watching the, you know, coming into the brewery and watching the football game.
And we've tried to, like, meld that idea with, you know, a hypier beer with Poundtown.
Yeah, which is that I'm looking forward to. When it starts getting warm next year, that I'm looking forward to brewing. Yeah, it's a beer called Poundtown because you just take it to Poundtown every time. It's an American light lager, but it's whirlpooled and dry hopped with Citra. So you get like just that really light, easy drinking American lager with a nice kiss of that flavor from the hops. So that beer, well, I'm waiting for that to have a label. That'll be great.
Yeah.
But also I just, you know, want a bunch of 16 ounce cans of it to crush. But I mean, overall, like we try to keep a pretty balanced list.
Yeah. It's definitely something, you know, like we added an extra draft box. We started with 8 taps. We're now up to 12. So that kind of affords us that ability to brew the classic styles that we all love to drink while also releasing beers that we know generally people get excited about. Like, again, today we released Kang and Kodos, and it was a Thursday. The brewery is pretty packed because it's a Northeast IPA. I mean, they were both very good, and they have their place. I enjoy Northeast IPA. I also enjoy mild. So when you come here, I can assure you there will always be a mix.
If you like, beer, there's going to be a beer for you on tap.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's kind of weird to say, like, you know, just the, you know, like, yeah, there's the hype beers, but you know, the mild is never going to sell as fast as the IPAs and everything, but there's still like the cans sold out in relatively the same amount of time. And, you know, there's people that come in and try a 4 ounce of it just as they want to try everything on the board. And they're like, oh, that's, it's really good. And then they get a pint of it. It's just, you know, there's certain, I think by having, like there's a lot of breweries that focus on, you know, just the hype beers, which is, you know, hey, if that works for them, that's totally fine. But I think, you know, a lot of people that are just getting into beer nowadays, like if they go to a brewery like that, you're missing out on a ton of stuff that you wouldn't get otherwise. So like, that's why, you know, we do have 4 IPAs on tap right now, which is great because, you know, they're all different, but somebody that comes in just to try the IPAs, like I said, they might try the mild and be like, oh, that's something different that I haven't had before. We have a Belgian single on tap.
Yeah.
So all different kind of stuff for, you know, everyone to try that, you know, maybe they haven't had before.
I mean, like really the only thing we wish we could brew more of at this time is lagers. Phil, Jake, and I all love a good lager. And just because it's a 6-week turnaround, like we only get those in, like we're going to pepper those in.
Like every couple months we can get one in.
Yeah, it's like quarterly beer, maybe a little bit better than that.
Frankly, if any of them sell as fast as the Oktoberfest did, I don't know if we're going to be able to brew many more.
Yeah.
Because our Oktoberfest, I mean, that sold out in like 2 weeks. So yeah, talk about, you know, non-hypey beers. Like that was insane. People loved it.
Jake, I know you said that you just like brewing. You don't necessarily like to, it doesn't matter what the style is, but is there one beer that stands out to you that's been your favorite beer that you've brewed so far?
Possibly our Oktoberfest. I think I wish we would have brewed a little earlier to enter that in the Great American Beer Festival, because I think that was as close to fitting a style as we could possibly get. I'd probably go with the Oktoberfest, but overall, I mean, hopefully, you know, ask me again in another 12 to 18 months. Hopefully it's the barley wine that I'm brewing next week, because that's going to be a giant pain in the ass to brew. And we got the bourbon barrels waiting out there for it. But I don't know. Again, I just like brewing, even if it's, you know, even if the beer's a pain in the ass to brew. It's, I don't know. I was here till 4 a.m. brewing the other day, whatever. I just like doing it.
Yeah.
Him, on the other hand, I hurt my back and he had to brew a couple batches while I sat there in a chair and yelled at him about which valves to turn. And
I'm retired.
When I finally got better, he was like, I never want to do that again.
I'm retired. I'm going to stick with doing the accounting. That's good enough for me. But like of the three of us, I would say Jake drinks our beer the least, like hands down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But yeah.
Well, that brings me to my next question then. When you're not drinking your own beers, what breweries, local or otherwise, do each of you like to drink?
So I love, like, so non-local, Firestone Walker and Bell's. We both are huge fans of the two.
Best two breweries in the country.
Yeah, regardless of how big they get, they just keep putting out great beer. Like, a Bell's Two Hearted is perfect any time of the year. Or Pivo, delicious. So, like, that's what I would go for as far as, like, non-local. Local, you know, our regulars are pretty cool. Like, they bounce around and get, like, four packs from everywhere. So, you know, we get a mix of everyone's beer. You know, we've been drinking. Yeah, we just had an imprint beer, like, before we got on the show. All Logic stuff is always coming in here. We're sampling that.
Carton. One of my friends works for Carton. He bombed us with like a case and a half of stuff the last time he stopped.
That's
by.
Been great. I've been slamming their house. Neshaminy.
Kane is also great. And then, I mean, I worked in Neshaminy for 5 years, so those guys are over here all the time and I'm over there, so always drinking their beer.
And then as far as like if we were to spread out towards the city, you know, I love Second District. Talking about beers that like are just two style. Like,
yeah,
they have a couple great to style beers.
Yeah, I want to get back down there.
The guys
stuff from Beacon. All the breweries that are right around here, we get to try them pretty frequently.
Speaking of getting, you know, you get beer coming to you guys, and some of the breweries you named, you know, they show up in bottle shops. Do you think that distribution is anywhere in your future? And will we ever see Second Sin cans or at a bottle shop?
No.
Yeah. Just based on like how, like the size of our brew house, we'll only be in-house as far as cans go. As kegs, that's another story. You know, we might like float a keg down to Philly. Like we met you guys while doing that beer garden down there. I'd love to get some beers down into the Philly market. Right now, we have had two beers on at Isaac Newton's in Newtown. We're going to try to get more beer to the bars that like kind of helped us out when we were getting into beer. So Isaac Newton's was one of those. That's, you know, an establishment that's huge craft beer bar in this area.
Distribution, especially for someone our size, it's really tough. But I don't, you know, if we put out a four pack, even if we did sell, you know, four packs of our beer into distribution, I would hate to walk into a place and see a 3-month-old 4-pack of my beer. That's very disturbing to me to think about that. So I like that we can control everything that, you know, if we have a beer that, you know, sits around for a little bit too long, okay, we can pull it off tap. If there's a couple kegs of it left, whatever, dump it. Like we've said it before that like if beer is bad and it's not up to our specifications and our what we want it to be, it goes down the drain. There's no question about it. So that's why, you know, one, that's why distribution is not really going to be for us, at least until we get a much more sophisticated canning line and everything to keep the, you know, the shelf life as long as possible. But also, I mean, we're like constantly ripping through beer to the point where we don't have the extra capacity to really sell it outside very much. And we need to make money we make like five times as much money selling a Sixel over the bar in pints as we do if I sent it to Isaac Newton. So that's really more of a marketing play than anything, just to get people to hear about us.
Well, you guys have been great. We really are so grateful that you guys came on and joined us today. But what you just said kind of perfectly leads into our last question, which is What does the future hold for Second Sin? So are you guys thinking you'd like to grow, or do you want to sustain at your current size?
We definitely are looking into growing. We'll see what happens in the new year. We're looking to expand our barrelage.
See what happens with COVID.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with COVID.
I mean, to be honest, so that's something that we haven't necessarily touched on, is that we opened up November 27th, 2019. We were open for 3.5 months when we got shut down for COVID. And then we were shut down. By the time we got to open to the public again, we were shut down for longer than we were actually open, you know, before that. So we don't really know what a post-COVID or a non-COVID Second Sin looks like, really. Yeah. You know, we're building some momentum, you know, being a newer brewery, but we just have no idea what it's going to be like. So I think, you know, hopefully in the next year or so, definitely add a couple tanks just so we can make some more beer and maybe can some more. So hopefully we don't sell out in a week of, you know, certain beers. Getting more barrel-aged beer going, and then eventually definitely doing another location somewhere just to spread things out a bit.
If the quality of your beer, of all your beers, is anywhere as close to the two that I had, the And Here We Goza and the Slave the Hive, then I foresee great things coming to you guys when you decide to expand. So thank you guys so much for being here, and we really look forward to enjoying your beer in the future, and perhaps we'll have you back on when you have an announcement to make about your expansion.
Awesome.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
New favorite brewery?
Absolutely. Those guys are awesome. They were so great.
I mean, what a look into like the whole process of going from home brewing to professional brewing, you know, stumbles along the way. They cover and listeners, we paused when we said goodbye and we talked to them for another 15 minutes. This Slave the Hive, Matt, have you drank it yet?
No, I still have my can. It will be consumed this weekend.
Slave the Hive is hop slam of memory. Like they say on the side of the can, Jake says, one of my favorite and most formative beers in my path to becoming a brewer was a seasonal double IPA that was brewed with honey and slammed you in the mouth with hops. Ring any bells? So, I mean, he admitted as much in the interview that it's essentially his homage to Hop Slam, and it is the Hop Slam of memory. It is the Hop Slam that you remember chasing down every January, February, before they started making so much of it that I don't even know what happened to it. Like, they haven't changed it too much, but it just isn't as great. And Slave the Hive, for me, I took the first sip of it and I was zapped back to like 2014. And when Hop Slam was great, it was great. And they were great. And this whole conversation was great. Matt, thank you for going to Kensington, going to you know, North Philly and finding these guys by happenstance and then making the interview happen. That was a great conversation.
Yeah, Jeff, it was my pleasure. I mean, the minute I met those guys, I was like, these guys need to be on because they just seem so approachable and knowledgeable and just nice, good people. And it was a pleasure getting to know more about the brewery. It makes me more invested. Hopefully more people listen to this and get up to their brewery, because I can tell you, as someone who's been drinking their way through his 20s and into his early 30s, I've had plenty of good beer, and their beer is fantastic. So definitely worth the trip to Bristol. Go to this brewery. Their beer is awesome.
While you're driving up 95, you can listen to episodes of Take a Shelfie. You can find it wherever you get podcasts. While you're there subscribing, please leave a review. We really appreciate it. It really helps. You can visit us on our website, shelfiepod.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter at shelfiepod and on facebook.com/shelfiepodcast. At all those places, we leave our comments section open, and we want you to tell us about the new brewery that you found and are subtly obsessed with. And and, you know, the places that you will sit in weird traffic to get to just to enjoy. If you are looking forward to an episode, like Jake said, where people make fun of the haze craze, Matt and I have one of those coming up too. So stay tuned to a future episode. Until that happens, and until the next episode, I'm Jeff Martin.
And I'm Matt Prince.
Cheers.